Now to Out of the Box, an occasional series here on Books and Arts, where we explore something, or in this case, someone who is out of time, who's out of the ordinary, and who stands quite apart in the history of art. Our first guest on Out of the Box is a Jesuit missionary who does something quite extraordinary. 300 years ago this year, Giuseppe Castiglione hops off a boat far from his native Italy. Who is he, and why are we talking about him today? To explain that and more, I'm joined by Ted Gott, who's Senior Curator of International Art at the National Gallery of Victoria. Ted Gott, welcome. Introduce us to this man, Giuseppe Castiglione. Who was he?
Well, he's an extraordinary figure in both Jesuit culture and in Chinese culture. He's born in 1688 in Milan, and he undergoes Jesuit training from 1707 in Genoa, and then he moves to Portugal for 2 years for further training, because Portugal has the concession Macau in China, so you can only enter China from Portugal. After completing his vows with the Society of Jesus in Portugal, where he undertakes a number of beautiful paintings of church interiors in the Western style, he then arrives in China in 1714, hoping to work as a Western Christian painter. But he discovers that at the court of the Chinese emperors, he has to do very different duties. And he actually serves three consecutive Chinese emperors. First of all, the Kangxi Emperor, mm-hmm. who passes away in 1722, then the Yongzheng Emperor, who passes away in 1735, and then from 1736 until his death 30 years later, Castiglione works exclusively for the Qianlong Emperor.
We're talking about the Qing Dynasty, and this is really the golden age in Chinese art. And Castiglione is very much at the forefront of
absolutely
characterising what it is that we look at as Chinese art today.
Yes. He's not the first European.
And it's not that unusual for him, for a Jesuit, to be at the court of the Qing rulers either, is it?
No. There were a number of European court painters there. Not a huge number. For example, in one figure that I can quote, 1743, there are 22 Jesuits in Peking. 10 French, 12 Portuguese, Italian, and German. And seven of those 22 worked exclusively for the Qianlong Emperor as artists. Mm. And Castiglione's one of those.
Now, he's 27. He's a trained painter. He's a lay brother, though, in the Society of Jesus. So he's not what you would call a Jesuit priest, is he?
Not a Jesuit priest in the sense of performing Mass and converting the masses to Christianity. He's an agent of soft diplomacy, as it were. The Jesuits thought that images could be used as a tool of religious instruction and moral edification. So they were happy to send painters to China as a political and evangelical tool. In a sense, this becomes meaningless when you talk about Castiglione, because the moment he begins to work for the Qianlong Emperor, he's ordered to only paint Qianlong court subjects and paint in a Chinese style. So he's not painting the baptism, the crucifixion, the Virgin Mary, all of which he'd been trained to do. And I have to say that if he had continued to do that Western style of Catholic mythology painting, he would be a forgotten artist today. Because really, he's a competent Baroque artist, but only that, in my humble opinion. And I think that by being challenged to paint Chinese subjects in a uniquely Chinese manner, as much as he could master it, suddenly a spark occurs. And by being turned in a different direction, one that he didn't choose, one that's imposed upon him, the Qianlong Emperor awakens in this artist the extraordinary. And out of it comes a marriage that creates an absolute symphony of colour and composition and masterful painting. I mean, one of the first things that the Qianlong Emperor does is tell him to stop painting in oils, because he finds the glossy reflectiveness offensive to his Chinese sensibilities. So dismiss all of Castiglione's training, and he has to learn to paint in tempera on silk, which the Qianlong Emperor felt was a much more graceful style of painting, because paintings in tempera, which have a matte surface, strike the eye pleasantly. I'm quoting directly with the Qianlong Emperor. They strike the eye pleasantly from whichever side you view a painting. So there's no disturbing reflection and flare. He also was forced to abandon chiaroscuro, the study of light and shade and three-dimensionality, to a large part that he'd been trained in, because shadows were considered to be bad omens in China.
He even adopts a Chinese name. He must have also learned to speak Mandarin. He's in China for a very long time.
That's right. From the moment he arrives in China, during the reign of the Chengliang Emperor's predecessor, the Kangxi Emperor, all Jesuits had to adopt Chinese dress and Chinese behaviour, and they had to take Chinese names. So Castiglione becomes Lang Xining, which means long, calm life. And he appears to have had that at the court of the Chengliang Emperor, which is pretty cool.
He obviously found favour. And his images of the emperor, I have to say, there's a degree of empathy and, well, sympathy actually is a better word. He seems to be sympathetic towards his subject.
Absolutely. You know, it's probably disrespectful to speak about a friendship between the emperor and the artist working for him, but there is definitely a documented relationship of deep respect between the two. Sometimes they would collaborate on paintings, because the Chengliang Emperor himself was a masterful painter and a poet. And so you'd have the two, ruler and artist, working together side by side. They would see each other daily, and while Castiglione was definitely in a subordinate position, you know, he would have to prostrate himself before court officials and pass through door after door in all the protocol before he could even see the emperor each day. Nonetheless, we know that he was the favourite painter of the Chengliang Emperor. And when Castiglione turned 70, the Chengliang Emperor throws an extraordinary birthday party for him with fireworks and celebrations. And it's a day-long festival, an extraordinary honour to give to a Western painter. And it must have created some enmity, because there's a whole court of Chinese artists also working for the Chengliang Emperor.
And I'm conscious too of, just talking about Castiglione and his, I guess his visual legacy. We don't want to say that there aren't extraordinary painters in the Chinese tradition, Chinese painters in the Chinese tradition. What's extraordinary about this man is, though, that he comes from a Western tradition and embarks on this whole new life and creates, a fusion. Although he's instructed to paint in the Chinese manner, he can't but help bring his own sense of realism to his subjects. I mean, there's an image I'm thinking of, again, on tempera, on silk. Some dogs in the foreground and cypress, I believe, in the background. And these dogs are very lovingly painted, like you would imagine a Renaissance painter might paint some dogs. And yet the trees behind, the cypress or whatever I'm pretty sure it's cypress, behind is the weeping willows, are very much in the Chinese tradition.
Absolutely. And he has, as you say, remarkable empathy for the natural world, both the animal world and the botanical world. He does manage to slip in westernizations. You know, he brings some perspective. An occasional shadow slips in. But I think that the key, perhaps, to unlocking his genius was the instruction that he was given to observe nature rather than to paint from the imagination. For an artist who's been trained to paint things he's never seen, the Virgin Mary hovering in clouds surrounded by little angels, to suddenly be asked to paint a loving portrait of the emperor's dog or his favourite horse or his concubines or the emperor himself, it's quite a different way of looking at the world, and I think that might be the secret. And I guess it kind of relates to the tension between Christianity and Chinese culture at this time. I mean, certainly the Kangxi Emperor, while he allowed Jesuits to come into China, he did not want them proselytizing and converting people to Christianity. And he's on record as saying, "How is it possible that you are always concerned about a world you have not yet entered and count for almost nothing the one in which you are now living?" That emperor who dies in 1722...
That's the Kangxi Emperor.
The Kangxi Emperor. Then the Chengliang Emperor virtually, I think, asked Castiglione to consider that very question. So let's just flip it around. How is it possible that you've been trained to only paint about a world you've not yet seen? And how about you apply your painterly training and skills to the world that surrounds you?
The world that we exist in.
That you're living in,
yes. It's a clash of philosophies, worldviews.
It's a clash of philosophies, but I think that Castiglione rises to the challenge. Mm. And perhaps that's why he fascinates both Chinese art historians and Western art historians. And look, his works of quality, they delight the public of all cultures.
Mm. Now, what happens to Castiglione, this extraordinary character?
Well, he passes away in 1766, 4 years after Catherine the Great comes to power in St. Petersburg. He's had a very successful career. He spends his entire life in China from 1714 to 1766. And the Changling Emperor lives for another 30 years after Castiglione's death. Castiglione is given a grand state funeral by the Changling Emperor, who truly regarded him as the great Western artist at his court.
Mm, a fascinating character. Ted Gott, Senior Curator of International Art at the National Gallery of Victoria, thanks for prizing open the box on Giuseppe Castiglione here on Books and Arts.
A pleasure. Thank you.